नहि अद्भुतं त्वच्चरणाब्ज रेणुभिर् हतां हसो भक्तिरधोक्षजे मला मौहूर्तिकाद्यस्य समागमाच्च मे दुस्तर्कमूलोपहतो विवेकः न नॉट ही सर्टेनली अद्भुतम वंडरफुल त्वच्चरण अब्ज रेणुभि बाय द डस्ट ऑफ योर लोटस फीट हत अमहसा हु एम कंप्लीटली फ्रीड फ्रॉम द रिएक्शंस ऑफ सिनफुल लाइफ भक्ति ही लव एंड डिवोशन अधोक्षजे unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is beyond the capture of experimental knowledge. Amala, completely freed from all material contamination. Mauhurtikat, momentary. Yasya, of whom. Samagamat, by the visit and association. Cha, also. Me, my. Dustarka, of false arguments. Moolaha, the root. Apahataha, completely vanquished. Avivekaha, not discriminating. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada ki jaya. It is not at all wonderful that simply by being covered by the dust of your lotus feet, one immediately attains the platform of pure devotional service to Adhokshaja, which is not available even to great demigods like Brahma. By associating with you just for a moment, I am now freed from all false arguments, false prestige, and lack of discrimination, which are the roots of entanglement in the material world. Now I am free from all these problems. Purport. Association with pure devotees certainly frees one from the material clutches. This is certainly true of King Rahugana's association with Jadabharata. King Rahugana was immediately freed from the misgivings of material association. The arguments offered by pure devotees to their disciples are so convincing that even a dull-headed disciple is immediately enlightened with spiritual knowledge. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chaksur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vancha kalpatarubhyascha kripa sindhubhya evacha patitanam bhavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shrivasadi Gora Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare By verses such as this, and by the Bhaktivedanta purport, we are given one more opportunity to consider the good fortune that we have been bestowed with. That we have access to many pure devotees in our lives. And by dint of their association, we are freed from the clutches of material existence. And so it behooves us to seriously express our gratitude in the form of a serious commitment to spiritual life, to them, and of course to Krishna. And Rahugana, Maharaj Rahugana, is having this epiphany right now. When he had first met Jadabharata, he was arrogant, full of pride, and considered himself to be the controller of the entire land and all the people. And so with such arrogance, he carried his rod for punishment, that he felt that he could treat people any way he would like, because that was his prerogative by being a king. And when he chastised this great personality, who out of compassion responded back? Prior to this, when the dacoits bound Jadabharata up to cut his head off in offering to Goddess Kali, he did not protest even a bit. Didn't say, "Hey, what are you doing?" Nothing. Just sat there. But when Maharaj Rahugana insulted him, he said something in response. This is his extreme way of showing mercy to Maharaj Rahugana, because as the master of the land, if Maharaj Rahugana's arrogance was not cut down, he would in turn inflict a lot of injustice upon the people of the land. And so he decided to instruct Maharaj Rahugana in transcendental knowledge. And we can see that this conversation has been taking place for quite a while. And Maharaj Rahugana, first time when it was explained, he posed certain arguments. "Oh, no, I think you may have said something, but I feel this is what is right." And Jadabharata, being a very soft-hearted, compassionate person, repeated and explained further all of his instructions. And now Rahugana has fully understood. And the first conclusion he comes to understand that this human form of life is very valuable. Any disciple or student of spiritual life, if he has accepted the instructions of Guru properly, then the first lesson that he awakens to is that this human form of life is very, very valuable. And it must not be squandered away. Not only must it not be squandered away, it must be made good use of. Kaumara acharet paragyo dharman bhagavataniha durlabham manusham janma tadapi arthadam adruvam. Although very rare to achieve this human form of life, it can provide great value. Arthadam. And the great value is, it can be the medium for self-realization. And so this message is given to a human being when they are very, very young. Kaumara acharit. When they are young, as young as 5 years old. Because if the message comes and they are 70 years old, I mean, in some rare cases, they can be utilized, but usually it's not enough time to make changes. So Rahugana's first realization is that this human form of life is very valuable In fact, it was so valuable that the outcome of utilizing the human form of life is not even available to the great demigods, who are very, very powerful. And they have great facilities, yet they don't have the same facility that a human form of life allows for. And he's saying, the reason being that in the great heavenly planets, where there is unlimited sensual enjoyment, the facilities, a person will not aspire for the association of great personalities. So the greatest wealth is a moment association with a Vaishnava. That wealth is far more valuable than millions of dollars. Because millions of dollars become source for further entanglement in the material world. They become the cause for a person's arrogance, pride, conceit, etc. But by the association of a devotee, one's real spiritual wealth awakens. That is uplifting. That makes a person humble and want to serve Krishna. That's the doorway. Mahatsevam dwaram ahor vimuktehe. By serving the great persons, the doors for liberation open up. And by serving that which is temporary, yoshitam sangi sangam. Tamo dwaram yoshitam sangi sangam. The door for darkness opens up when we are very attached to sanghi sanghas. Those who are very interested in sensual enjoyment, specifically sex desire. And so the greatness of a pure devotee is that they are prashanta ste samachitta. So they are very joyful always, prashanta. There is nothing that disturbs them. Samachitta, their heart is in equanimity, equipoised in all circumstances. And one of the, you know, a person can generally be equipoised in most circumstances. Yeah. Whether they have money or no money, whether they are getting something to eat or not getting something to eat. A yogi can fairly manage it. But what is difficult to manage is insult. And so the next line says, Vimanyava Sadhava. Vimanyava means one who does not feel insulted or becomes angry at a person who insults him or her. Because in that purport, Prabhupada says that when a person becomes angry, suppose a sage becomes angry at the ordinary person, if such a sage were there, then he will not give transcendental knowledge. But the nature of great persons is that even if they are insulted, they will not stop giving transcendental knowledge to the very person who is insulting them. Vimanyava. Therefore the song that was very nicely composed for Lord Nityananda, Akrodha Paramananda Nityananda Raya. No anger. When Madhai struck his head with a pot, Lord Chaitanya became angry. Because he was showing us the principle that we should not tolerate insult to a Vaishnava. But Lord Nityananda as a Vaishnava wanted to help him. No, please don't become angry at him. Madhai doesn't know what he's doing. This quality is very important. Because as we go out, we may not be great sadhus. But when we go out, people say all sorts of things to us. And the quality of Vimanyava is to not get disturbed by that. There are so many pastimes of the devotees being harassed and insulted when on Harinam and book distribution. In Chicago, at one time there was this marathon, and the devotees were distributing books left, right, and center. Hundreds of books in each day. And apparently there was a point in time when one of the devotees who were distributing books, a sailor, he came with his coat covering part of his face so people don't recognize him. He walked up to the devotee and without saying anything, just punched the devotee, pow, right on his nose. And the devotees literally almost lost his conscience and fell on the ground. And he ran away. And there was blood splattered all over his face. The books were sprawled on the ground. And everyone was shocked. This devotee got up, wiped the blood off, picked up the books, and went to the next man and started distributing books. No anger in the heart. That quality is very amazing. So here, Rahugana is expressing, you've given me the greatest gift, that I can value this human form of life, and more importantly, I can value your association. He says, it's not at all wonderful, nahi adbhutam, tvat charanabja renubhir. He's saying it's not wondrous, it's not like, wow. When a person who comes in contact with the dust of your lotus feet, how transformative it can be. When he says it's not wondrous, it means it's a great glory. It is very easy that anyone who comes in contact with the lotus feet, the dust of the lotus feet of a pure devotee, becomes transformed. It's just the nature of that dust. And the transformation is hatam haso bhakti radhokshaje amala. So he says, just by your association for a moment, and more than a moment has passed actually in the instruction, but just by a moment, three things happen. He says, I'm freed of all false argument, false prestige, and lack of discrimination. These three, he says, are the root of material entanglement. And he says, I'm free of these problems. Amala, dustarka, apahata, vivekaha. So, first of all, he says, false argument. In Rahugana's case, he offered false arguments. The false argument he was offering was that he had a very vague idea of spirituality. Mostly, a impersonalist type of understanding. And to a large degree, it seemed in the direction of, but it was not accurate. Because impersonalistic teachings are in the direction of transcendence. They're not, to a large degree, they are in the same direction. But they miss a very, very critical aspect. And the critical aspect is, he's saying, bhakti radhokshaja. That those teachings are devoid of the heart in its right place. And because the heart is not in its right place, a person relies primarily on argument, false argument, because it touches the intellectual platform very well. And beyond the intellectual platform is the soul proper, or where the heart is, where bhakti resides. So, in terms of philosophical understanding, the impersonalist teaching quite well aligns there. Intellectually, it makes sense. yet misses a very, very critical ingredient, the heart. So Jadabharata removed that little thing, little but significant thing, so that all his false argument now didn't make any sense. Or his arguments had a basis. For most persons who may not be fixed in impersonalist teachings per se, they may be impersonal by nature, but teachings may not be so well established. They have all sorts of arguments for not taking up devotional life. They're called excuses, said bluntly. They're excuses. We've heard Srila Rupad Swami call it the ya but phenomena. Whatever you tell them, they will hear it and they'll say, yeah, that's true, but. Whenever you hear ya but, that's the first indicator that there's an excuse waiting to come. Ya but. The excuse that why this is not applicable to me, or why this instruction cannot be applied by me, because my situation is so unique that the Bhagavatam applies for everyone else except me. Yeah, but. And part of the yeah, but is the complexity of the mind, that the spiritual master can cut through all that complexity and see the simplicity of the issue. But the bhakta cannot see. The bhakta is caught in the quagmire or the complexity of the problem, cannot understand the root cause. Like Sunday class, where we're talking about satisfaction. The reason the heart is dissatisfied is because a fundamental need has not been taken care of. The fundamental need is being connected to Krishna. In the absence of that fundamental need, a conditioned living entity tries to solve the dissatisfaction by a very, very complicated methodology called sense gratification. Very complicated. And in that complicated methodology, there is a lot of harm. But he doesn't care for the harm because he is looking for the honey. It doesn't matter. That's the whole forest of material existence discussion. He gets a little honey, but for that, he will ignore for the moment the thorns piercing him, the bruises, the wild animals chasing him, the mosquitoes biting him. It doesn't matter. It's worth it because there is a little honey somewhere. And I'm sure it's there. And he gets some honey, no doubt. He gets a drop or two. But that's okay. Hey, at least that's... So it's very complicated. And so he provides all sorts of arguments. In Srila Prabhupada's Leela, when Srila Prabhupada met Bhaktisiddhanta the first time, and he had not even finished paying his obeisances to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he had never met this person. He just came into this assembly and Bhaktisiddhanta was speaking. And before he sat down, he was given an instruction for the rest of his life. Go to the West and speak to the English-speaking parts of the world. Whoa, hold on a second. And Prabhupada offered an argument. How can this be possible? Whole of India has been subjugated by the British Raj. And people are struggling because they don't have freedom. They're struggling under the British rule. The first order of business is to free the country from this British rule. And Bhaktisiddhanta's argument was cutting. He said the need for the spirit is more important than the need for the body. Even if a person gets so-called freedom, what is he going to do? He's still going to be entangled in the material nature. And true to Bhaktisiddhanta's words, let's take India's example. It's been an independent nation for more than 60 years. And honestly speaking, that country is in more trouble now There was a politician who said, I don't know who said this, but whoever said it, not that it is spiritually true, but it is just funny. He said, if you know the history of India, he said, what the Mughals, you know, the Persian kings who came to India, to rule over India, he said, what the Mughals could not do in 400 years of rule, I think 600 years of rule, something. The Mughals ruled India for 600 some years, I think. So what the Mughals could not do in 600 years, what the British could not do in over 200 years of rule, the Indian politicians have destroyed the country within 40 years. So so-called freedom, or take this country, right? We hear from the Declaration of Independence, this is the land of the free. Free from what? Free to move about? Free to go about sense gratification. And what's the outcome? The highest rates of depression, the highest rates of suicides, the highest rate of murder, so much crime, cheating, corruption. We're talking of India. It's true everywhere. It's not just this country. Everywhere. So it's not necessary that because a country is free, that the people are free. They're still entangled very, very seriously by the modes of material nature. On a social level, freedom is necessary. I'm not arguing against it. Bhakti Siddhanta said that more important is the freedom of the spirit. A counter example, when Haridas Thakur was put in jail, and with him were so many other persons, and they all prayed to Haridas Thakur, oh, we're in jail, we're incarcerated because the Muslim king will not allow us religious freedom. We are praying to Krishna very ardently. And Haridas Thakur said, very good. May you remain in this condition. What? And he said, I'm not saying that may you remain incarcerated, but because you are in such a condition, you're thinking of Krishna very, very strongly. So may you always think of Krishna strongly like that. The second issue, or second freedom, is false prestige. Pride and false prestige go together. And this is the relationship. Pride comes from a false sense of identity. I am king. I am whatever. I am husband. I am the leader. Something. It's a false sense of identity. And because one has a false sense of identity, there is what's associated with that is false prestige. Giving value to something that doesn't have value. This is called false prestige. We assign value to things that don't have value. For example, a credit card. It has nothing. It's a piece of plastic with a magnetic strip in the back with some data. We consider that to be money. And if it's a platinum card, then your prestige increases. Whoa, I have a platinum plastic card. You just have a white plastic card. Or so-called money. Because money is important, I'm not saying it. But the sense, the value that is assigned to money. Most people understand that there is money as long as you're alive. At the time of death, doesn't matter how rich you are, that money cannot help. Cannot help. And you cannot take it. You can't take a penny on your next to your next situation. Or giving value to certain things. Srila Ramanujacharya wanted to teach his disciples a lesson. So Sunday I narrated the story of, without giving names, of this person called Dhanurdas, who was so enchanted by the eyes of this young lady. But after meeting Ramanujacharya, his life became so transformed that he and his wife became extremely, extremely dedicated disciples of Ramanujacharya. And Ramanujacharya also loved them very much. But his brahmacharya and sannyas disciples became a little disturbed. What is this? We are ascetics, we are sannyasis, but Guru Maharaj likes these grihasthas very much. Grihasthas, they are fallen. What is all this? So he heard that. The rumors came to Ramanujacharya. So he wanted to teach them, or wanted them to see the glories of Dhanurdas and his wife. So he played a two-part plan. The first part was that at night, when all the sannyasis and brahmacharis were sleeping, he asked one of his disciples to mix up everyone's dhotis, gamchas and kopins and all of that. So when they woke up the next morning, someone else had this Prabhu's dhoti. Someone else had that Prabhu's gamcha, and it all got mixed up. And so in the morning they were fighting. Why are you wearing my gamcha? That is my gamcha. Why are you wearing my dhoti? That is my dhoti. Oh, where is my water pot? Who took my water pot? And he also, the second part of the thing was, he told some of his disciples that you should call Dhanurdas to come meet me late in the night. And when he comes home, his wife will be sleeping at home. All of you should go, be at his house, and two of you should steal all their belongings, the jewelry and everything. So Dhanurdas was invited to meet Ramanujacharya. All the disciples were standing outside Dhanurdas' house, and some of his disciples went and took away all the belongings from their house. Some of the disciples took away her jewelry. So she was lying to one side, so they took off her bangles, they took off her ankle bells and earrings. So in her sleep, she turned this side from left to right, and they got scared and ran away. And Dhanurdas came back home, and he told them, don't leave, hear the conversation. So when Dhanurdas came home, his wife woke up, and he saw and said, what is this? You have earrings on your left, you have bangles on your left side, and have ankle bells or anklets on your left foot. Why is your right side empty? So she said, oh, I think the ashram is in financial difficulty. Your godbrothers, they came in the dead of night and stole my jewelry. And I felt, oh, and they stole everything else from the house as well. And I thought, maybe they're in financial difficulty. They need more money. So I turned this side so they can take away from this side too. But they got scared and ran away. And that was an awakening for all the who were hearing outside, that look at them. They have such a spirit of sacrifice. They want to give and give and give. And look at us. We were fighting for who's wearing my gamcha, who's wearing my dhoti. So they came back to Ramanujacharya, fell at his feet and begged for forgiveness. We were so sorry. Although we are sannyasis and brahmacharis and meant to be renounced, we are attached to even the sense of, this is my cloth. It's false prestige. Giving value coming from a false idea of identity. Ramanujacharya taught him a very nice lesson. Or certain things we assign value. When Sanatana Goswami came to meet Lord Chaitanya, at first no one recognized Sanatana Goswami. Lord Chaitanya was in the house of Tapan Mishra, thank you. He was in the house of Tapan Mishra. And he said to him, go out, there must have been a sadhu who must be here. Go look for him. He went out, came back and said, there's no one here. He said, no, there must be someone, look. He went out again, no, there's no one here, there was no sadhu. No, no, look again. Oh, I only see a Muslim mendicant. Muslims are one who have beard and no mustache, and Sanatan Goswami had been running and wanting to come meet Lord Chaitanya for many days. So he said, there's a Muslim mendicant outside. So Lord Chaitanya said, yes, yes, call him in. He is very special. And he said, this is Sanatan Goswami. He's very dear to me. Please give him a room, give him a facility to shave and clean up and nice Vaishnava cloth. And so Sanatan Goswami came, all nicely shaved, tilak. And he had worn simple clothes, but he had a very fancy shawl. So Lord Chaitanya looked at that shawl, stared at it. So Sanatan Goswami understood, oh, Lord Chaitanya doesn't like me wearing this fancy clothes. He left. He went to a beggar on the street and told him, my dear sir, would you like to trade my expensive shawl for your shawl, which is tattered and full of holes in it? And so the beggar said, are you joking with me? Are you insulting me? Why? No, 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 I mean it. Please take my nice shawl and give me yours. And when he wore that, came back, Lord Chaitanya said, yes, that was the only thing that you were attached to. All of your attachments are now gone. The false prestige comes as long as there is this strong bodily conception of life. It is there. Cannot deny it. It is there. As soon as the bodily conception of life dissolves, false prestige goes away. Amanina. This is called mana. Sense of false prestige. One of the other ways false prestige manifests is looking for others to respect us. In some way or the other. And that respect manifests as acknowledgement, looking for others to express their gratitude to us, acknowledging our position, who we are, acknowledging our presence in the first place. Oh, what am I? Chopped cabbage? You didn't even see me? Don't say Haribol? What's this? Coming from prestige, or false prestige. And the third one, he says, lack of discrimination. Avivekaha. Viveka means one who is very discriminating. He can tell, the greatest discrimination is to tell that which is eternal from that which is temporary. Nasate vidyate bhavo, na bhavo vidyate sataha. Ubhayor abhidrishtvantas, tanvayor tattva darshivi. So that discrimination comes only when there is transcendental knowledge. Without transcendental knowledge, cannot be discriminating. In fact, one cannot understand the difference between a snake and a rope. Because in ignorance, you can't see the truth. In darkness, you can't see truth. So by the presence of a pure devotee, the spiritual master, that ignorance goes away. The ability to discriminate comes. Because prior to meeting the spiritual master, a person is very, very busy groping in the darkness of material existence and cannot distinguish between, hey, all my activities are nothing but ephemeral, meaning has no everlasting impact. Whatever I'm doing has no everlasting impact. Because I'm only doing things for the body. There's a famous story of a person with four wives. The fourth wife was his favorite. She was the youngest, very attractive. And he spent all of his fortune on her. He bought her beautiful jewelry, cosmetics, perfumes, clothes, and every day would just shop like anything for her. The third wife was someone who was very intelligent, and he used to go to her for advice. I'm sorry, this third wife was someone that he was very proud of. And whenever he went to parties or he met important people, he would take his third wife with him. And everyone would say, wow, what a beautiful wife, what a wonderful wife he's got, very lucky guy. And whenever he needed some advice, he would go to his second wife. And she gave him good advice. But he neglected his first wife, as if she didn't even exist for him. That's how he spent his life. And with time, there came a moment when he was on his deathbed. And all his wives were gathered around him. His eyes were fixed upon his fourth wife because she was the most, or she was the dearest. He was not even interested in the first one. And so with painful heart, he asked her, oh, my dear, when I die, will you come with me? She said, no way. And the way she said it was so hurtful that he felt completely devastated. And tears rolled down his cheeks. How can you be like that? I've done everything for you. I've spent all my money for you, all my time for you. And so he asked his third wife, oh, honey, will you come? She said, no, I will also not come with you. So that was like the double whammy. And he asked his second wife, will you come with me when I die? She said, I'll come up to the crematorium. And after that, you're on your own. And so there was the third whammy, I guess. So his first wife spoke up and she said, I'm there. He said, what? Yes, I'm there with you. I've been there with you all the time and I'll be there. And he felt that it was too late to say anything to her because he was dying. And he recognized, oh, I've wasted so much time. I wish I had, you know, spent my time with you and for you. And so it's described that every one of us has four wives or four husbands, that's the case maybe. And the fourth wife for which all the time and money and effort is spent is the body. And when we die, the body doesn't go with us. It becomes ash, dust, or stool. The third wife is our achievements in this world, like the degrees, the titles, etc., that we earn. And when we go to meet others, everyone's like, wow, oh, he has a degree from such and such place. He has experience in such and such company. He has all these titles. He's the member of this, the president of that, this and this, the secretary of that. Wow. You've seen people's business cards? The name is so much, the titles are so long. It's false prestige. And the second wife who gives good advice are all the friends and relatives. And when a person dies, they will accompany him to the crematorium. And that's about it. They can't do anything beyond that. And the most ignored one is the soul. But most people recognize it, if they're even intelligent, at the time of death. Other than that, they can't recognize. Even at death, they can't recognize. But some people do get a little awakening, and it's called Smashana Vairagya. Smashana Vairagya means renunciation in the funeral home. When you see the body of the relatives and friends burning, or buried, that's the time when people awaken to, oh, there must be something else to life. I think I must be a little bit more spiritual. Or what is the pursuit of all these things for anyway? And when they come home, they want to know what's the football score, and all of that renunciation goes out of the window. So they feel a sense of renunciation in the funeral home, a little bit. It's called Smashana Vairagya. But by the presence of a pure devotee in one's life, these things come to the forefront. And it doesn't mean the presence of the pure devotee is for a very long time. He's saying, muhurtat, mahurtikat. Mahurtikat means even for a moment. Because that's all they're all about. To give a person truth. Naked truth, if you like. And they don't waste any time. And so the mercy of a spiritual master is fantastic in the sense that even if the disciple is dull-headed, Prabhupada says, the arguments offered by the pure devotees to their disciples are so convincing that even a dull-headed disciple is immediately enlightened with spiritual knowledge. However intelligent a person may be, is considered dull-headed if he doesn't know the difference between matter and spirit. Worldly intelligence has only so much value. But the words of a spiritual master are cutting, are awakening, are inspiring, are enthusing, such that a disciple is infused with spiritual knowledge. And Maharaj Rahugana is acknowledging it. Oh, all these things have gone away. Similar to what Arjuna says in the Bhagavad Gita. Nashta moha smritir labdhva. My illusion has been dispelled and my memory has been restored. Memory that I am a servant of Krishna. I am an eternal fragmental part of Krishna called the spirit soul and I am a servant of Krishna. This is the memory. So we are living a life of what's called primordial amnesia. We've forgotten. And the human form of life is meant to revive our true identity. Any questions or comments? Himanshu, Luke.
Thank you. Hare Krishna. On this topic of false prestige.
False prestige.
My practical experience, seeing how difficult it is to take on tolerating circumstances for the sake of rendering service, I can tell that the false prestige of thinking I'm the enjoyer is very strong. And I'm just wondering, how is that feeling going to go away? Because even in devotional service, I find I'm doing things that are okay with my conditioned nature, that I have a propensity for, quote unquote, that I enjoy doing. And then when some trying circumstances come, it's like, whoa, what is this? So I'm just wondering, how is this feeling that I'm the enjoyer ever going to go away?
Tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. If we just say from today I will not be an enjoyer, that's a good start. A few moments later we enjoy the idea that I'm not the enjoyer. Ah, look at this, so nice, I'm not the enjoyer. Or, from today I'll be very humble. Hare Krishna, I'm very, very humble. So here he's talking about a transformative potency. And the transformation comes from Hatam haso bhakti adhokshaje amala. Without the contamination. And for that mala to go away, is that bhakti radhokshaje. Continue serving. We can only do where we are. We can't do something artificial. So, tivrena bhakti. Continue the regulative devotional service. Let's continue, not just you. Let's continue the regulative devotional service strongly. And one day, without our noticing, Krishna will take it away. That's the only way. Krishna has to take it away. We can fight and struggle to get rid of it. It doesn't go away. So our process is that let our attention be in serving Krishna. Yes, there are all these things. And at least we are recognizing, hey, what's going on? That's nice. That's Krishna's way of helping. And when we are continuously sincere every day, Krishna will take it away. My dear Krishna, this enjoyment spirit is really bothering me. Please help me. Please continue to engage me in your service so that I'm freed of this and I can serve you without this sand and sweet rice. And whenever Krishna desires, he will remove it. Bhakti Lok. Hare Krishna.
You're mentioning the disciples of Ramanujacharya, who were brahmacharis and sannyasis, but still they were afflicted by this sense of false proprietorship. So we also hear about, there are many examples, but I was thinking also of the disciples of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who were arguing over this room, that room, like that. So it's bewildering to think that there are these persons who have been practicing devotional service for a long time. They maybe have accomplished a lot for their spiritual master. In many respects are very exalted persons. But still they can be affected by and influenced by the illusory potency. How should we understand this?
Well, if it is like that for them, what to speak of us? That's the first thing. A devotee first looks here, no? So even after so many years of accomplished devotional service and achieving so much for spiritual master, there are these manifestations of false prestige. What to speak of me? I'm just starting out. So how much more careful should I be? And how much more alert and watchful must I be as I'm going through my daily devotional activities? We're starting from like a Maha Mishra Bhakti. And these things are not easy to go away. They're not easy. So those devotees who have accomplished so much, that means they have put in such intense devotional life, devotional credits, if you will, that they've achieved them. So that's great. So we know how difficult it is to work against those anarthas. Still they've done. So they're very wonderful. And if they've fallen victim, hey, it's unfortunate. Then how much more careful should I be when I have so much in my heart? Rather than spend time figuring out and judging, to what advantage is that? At least these are ways we can say, oh, that's another caution, that's another alert. How much more should I be thinking about and be watchful? That's the only way. Maharaj Bharat, I mean, he's done it for setting an example, but Maharaj Bharat. The point is, as long as we are in the material world, there is always the risk, always the risk. So on a daily basis, you know, yesterday or the day before, I was talking to someone and they said, you know, I'm really scared that I have to commit to following the regulative principles and chanting Hare Krishna for the rest of my life. That's a big commitment. And I said, yes, it's a very big commitment. But it's not like you make a commitment today for the rest of your life. That's not how it works. Yes, you make a commitment today, you make a commitment tomorrow and the day after. On a daily basis, the commitment is today, I will maintain all the principles. I will chant Hare Krishna. I'll be very loving to the devotees. I'll be in a service attitude. Please let today be dedicated to serving Guru and Krishna. On a daily basis, it needs to happen. Then it doesn't seem such a daunting task. And challenges will come. So when challenges come, please let my attention go to the wonderful instructions given by Guru and the founder Acharya. So you take whole life on a daily basis. But today I made a decision for the rest of my life. Definitely it's overwhelming. So like that, when things happen to others, do I have something that they are struggling with? Oh yeah, let me be careful. Yeah, go ahead.
So as we continue in devotional life, we hear it's necessary to be introspective and thinking like observing our progress. But how can we actually measure our progress and not be deluded into thinking, oh, like you mentioned, false accomplishments. How can we avoid taking those things as signs I'm advancing? And actually, what is the real measurement?
Bhakti paresha anubhava viraktir anyatra cha. Prabhupada, in this verse, Prabhupada says, you don't need anyone's certificate. You will know for yourself. Bhakti, is there loving feelings manifesting for Krishna, Guru and all the devotees, and in fact all living entities? Or am I exerting my power over them? Para isha anubhava, in that para isha anubhava, Prabhupada says in a class, that means satisfaction. It also means I have a greater sense of Krishna's identity with me. But on a practical term, sense of satisfaction. Like whatever is coming by providential arrangements, am I accepting them without complaining or gritting my teeth or just resigning to it, but satisfyingly accepting. Oh, this is what Krishna wants me to have. And viraktir anyatra cha. There is distaste and detachment from those things that I thought were pleasurable. False prestige and those things as well. These are we know for ourselves. And if we are having problems understanding that, then there are enough people to tell us what is wrong with us. Right? Just as we are ready to tell others what's wrong with them, there are enough to tell us what's wrong with us. There's a story of a sage, or he was begging, and the whole day he didn't get anything. At the end of the day, he found someone gave him one dry chapati. He sat under a tree, looked at the dry chapati, closed his eyes and was praying to Krishna, thank you for giving me this dry chapati today. And a dog came by and took it away. As soon as he opened his eyes, he saw the dog eating and he prayed to Krishna, thank you for using me as an instrument to bring this dog the dry chapati. That was his immediate understanding. That was an instrument. Somewhere I picked it up, it was meant for this dog. Thank you for using me as an instrument. That is paresha anubhava. It's a high state, but the point is like that. These three things. 8:35. Thank you. Anything from here? Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.
Oh!
Today is the day we go to meet Joe Moore's, council for the firehouse. You're aware, right? I made this announcement on Sunday. Okay, so please give us your blessings and pray to Krishna for us. It's from 7 to 9, waiting for that slot. Tonight. Jai Jagannath. Hey, man.